What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, a more pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is July 1st, and yes, we're going to talk about baseball, but before we really get into it, I do have to address Cade Cavalli last night. What he did to Wilson Contreras was wrong. He's the one who started the brawl. First and foremost, what he said, sit down, boy, yeah, that is not something that is okay to say. It is worse than just shouting some random expletive at him, and that right there started everything, not to mention the fact that Cade Cavalli said it, stared at Contreras, who was just walking away, didn't do anything. He's just walking away and doing that, and then Cavalli instigates the entire thing. So, not cool whatsoever. Just want to get that out of the way. If you feel differently, fine, whatever. I think it's important to identify when things are not okay and for us to call it out and just say, hey, look, that isn't cool. That shouldn't be happening. And don't normalize it. All right, we have him going 7 innings, 0 runs, 1 hit, 0 walks, and 13 Ks, 25 whiffs, 41% CSW for a golden goal. And I gotta say, it really just is so unfortunate that he acted that way yesterday, because this was the start I've been waiting for Cade Cavalli. It was incredible. Keep in mind, like, if you had Cade Cavalli for the last 10 outings, it was a 4.10 ERA and a 1.29 whip with about 5 strikeouts a game. That is not someone that was really rosterable, or at least someone you wanted to have over 10 games. And I'd been saying, yeah, this isn't that great because he breaks the Wasker rule. That is, he has a good breaking ball and his fastballs have empty velocity. They don't do enough and he doesn't have anything to mix in between those. Now, it's a sinker and a four-seamer. Both of them are whatever. And then you have the curveball, which really turns into the sweeper because he pulls down his hand a little bit. Essentially, he's throwing a curveball over the top. And then for the sweeper, he's coming a little bit more on the side, but it's the same movement, just kind of further along the clock. However, last night, very different. Cade Cavalli not only just threw harder, it was 1 to 2 ticks up across the board. We had four seamers at 98, not like the 96 and change. Same with the sinker at 97, 98. And then you had an 87.5 mile per hour curveball, which is insane when it has such good movement on it. I mean, we're talking legit two plane at 87, 88, like it's a gyro slider, but 10 inches of depth and 10 inches of sweep is crazy good. And it's pretty much the same thing with the sweeper, but it's not just this. It's not just that. I mean, even if you just had those, you had 12 whiffs on the four-seamer instead of 6 as his season high prior. That's the highest, the most whiffs he got in a game on his four-seamer prior to this one was 6. He had 12 here because, yeah, it's coming in harder. He has these sweepers and curves going 45% CSW underneath, and he can just elevate them and have success. But it's also one last thing that Baseball Savant doesn't have right. I had to correct it inside my own dashboard today, because Cade Cavalli, for the second straight start, is throwing a cutter. And that cutter last game was 4 thrown, really like 3 of the same shape, one of a weird one. That actually was picked up as a changeup, which is so wrong. And it's cool to see that Cavalli, instead of just throwing that 3 times in the 6th inning against the Phillies, that he worked it more across this outing 12 times. And that is such a huge, huge thing. Why? Because it's the bridge pitch. It is the savior of the Wasker rule. Let's just say that Cade Cavalli loses this velocity, right? Then he's back down to 96, 97 on the four-seamer. The curveball is at 85, so on and so forth. Then he would need something else. That's not the four-seamer. That's not the breaking ball to get a strike when one of those isn't working, right? That is what the cutter does, and it's so cool to see that it is legitimate at 94 in this one. So it's like a RAS pack that he's doing of 98, 97, 94, but four-seamer, sinker, and cutter. And then you have, of course, the big breaking ball. So I'm a huge fan of this whole thing. It was against the Red Sox, and that is a team that is one of the worst in baseball against right-handers, so keep that in mind. But if Cade Cavalli does this again, I mean, he's great. This is awesome. Now, it's going to be against Houston and then the Yankees and possibly Sacre Verde after the All-Star break. So, not ideal. And also, you know, him being him isn't fun. But it kind of feels like it's something that you should be... Yeah, he should be far higher than 86 on the list as he was yesterday, as I did not expect him to just have 3 new skills out of nowhere. You have Christopher Sanchez being dope, and that's all you need to know there. Noah McClain was great against the Jays. Really good left-handed approach, and I really like that he went after this curveball to lefties a lot more. It is a very good two-plane curveball at 83, not 88, but it has more movement than Cavalli's. However, his right-handed approach still needs a little bit of polish, and I hope to see that develop more over time. So it's a good step forward. He's not quite back yet. Connelly early was removed from that game against Cavalli after four innings. He was looking great. Five strikeouts, five base runners, zero in runs, four innings against the Nationals. But he has been put on the IL since, oh man, because of a left elbow soreness. And it's just very sad. And I do not expect him to come back in the minimum stay. Tarek Skubal gets his ace. He's going to ace because he went six innings, one earned run, one hit, zero walks, and nine Ks. And he allowed a solo shot to Ben Rice in the first inning. And it was... that was it. That was the only blemish on the day. Amazing stuff there. The changeup was actually 45% strikes, which is not very good on 20 thrown. However, if three of them were chased, then there you go. That's 60%. It's not really the biggest deal, but just kind of strange for Tarek Skubal. You have Kevin Gausman back on the horse. Six innings, one run, five hits, two walks, and seven Ks, 14 whiffs. Look, you should not have benched him after the last two, right? It happens all the time with Gausman that he just doesn't have the results that you'd expect. This one was actually kind of weird. He threw inside four-seamers to lefties with away splitters to lefties. And normally you only see north-south differential, but this was actually east-west. Rarity for Gausman, but it worked. We're cool. Everything's fine there. Brandon Font returned. He got a win against the Giants. That's really cool. 5.1 innings of one earned run, three hits, one walk, and two Ks. He had two whiffs, though, and this was Koufax really helping out. Nothing really new here for me to get interested. He is moving away from breaking balls and throwing more of the four-seamer sinker changeup approach with a couple of cutters that are thrown a little bit more than the breakers. I don't really like this, though. And even though he's going to Petco Park, Brandon Font is not for me. I have Eury Pérez inside of Coors. You got all these surprising things. You got inside of Coors getting a win, going one earned run in 5+, with a decent whip of six base runners in 5.1 innings, with eight strikeouts, 19 whiffs, and after throwing 68 pitches last time, I was like, okay, cool, he's going to be limited again. I hope he goes 86 pitches. Amazing. And what isn't amazing is how he got there. He had sweepers going 50% zone rate, which is nice. So he has a stabilizing sweeper in there. Great. Forcing was all over the place. Sliders were, they kind of were there. They kind of weren't. And that's it. Like, that's not enough. I need more, Eury. I need more. Sorry, buddy. You have Matthew Liberatore against Atlanta. Five innings, one earned run, one hit, four walks, and nine strikeouts, 15 whiffs, 98 pitches. He gets a gold star, obviously. It's really cool to see him with the slider. It's going back foot to right-handers getting whiffs there. You have the same thing, but just to left-handers, so down and away with that slider. That's really important for Matthew Liberatore. Everything else was kind of whatever. The four-seamer had 75% strikes against right-handers because of that lower slider. And that's cool. Change of a curve, we're not really there. And I feel like this is just one of those good days with the slider feel because nothing else changed, not even movement or velocity. You have Tanner Bibee against the Rangers. This was the best commanded game I've seen from Tanner Bibee. Seven innings, two earned runs, five hits, zero walks, and two Ks. The changeup stayed completely arm side away to lefties, which is wild. Like, he normally just has the thing scattered around. He went to 33% usage against left-handers, which was normally around like 20-25%. 85% strikes, which is so cool. And then he had fastballs inside and curveballs down. And you have like the one curveball to Jock Peterson that was up and away and he took it and blah, blah, blah. Fine, two-run shot, the only blemish, right? Now you have the right-handed approach too, which is kind of interesting because he had low strike rates on the cutters, but it was away. And because they were falling off the plate that way, it was the X games that David Cone talks about where you have one thing going off and one thing coming on. And that was the sinker who had 30% called strikes. And he had five whiffs on the day. So, I mean, look, this is the best commanded like approach of a kitchen sink guy that I've seen from Tanner Bibee. I don't really think that's something that we should bank on because he's not this normally. And even in this, he had to have Koufax help him out, where he only had two strikeouts. So we had 19 whiffs on balls in play here. Okay, that's, I don't know if I like that so much. He does get the White Sox and then at Miami next. So Tanner Bibee, it's still kind of a coin flip. Jacob deGrom against the Guardians. Ace is going to ace there. Seven innings of nine strikeouts, 200 runs, four hits, zero walks. He's up to 98.7, and I say it like that because it's close to 99, but it's not there, and he wasn't 97 before. And that's just really cool to see. Brian Wu, I initially typed ace is going to ace, and I realized, oh, right, of course, that's not Brian Wu, I guess, right now. But this was good. 6.1 innings of 200 runs, four hits, one walk, and five Ks. He got the win against the Angels. He dropped the four-seamer usage, so just 32% instead of like 50% plus. And what he did is he threw a ton of sweepers at the very bottom of the zone With sliders as well. 33% breakers there to right-handers, which is really cool. 34% sinkers above it. And then you have those four seamers as a mix-up. I dig that. You also had some changeups, 4-for-11 strikes against lefties, not the best, but they were down, which then made the four-seamer perform better upstairs. So we're cool. And then you get Miami and Oracle Park, hosting the Giants and then going into Miami, reverse that order. But you understand, it's good. Do that. Brandon Sproat against the Reds, he did it a second time, but it was only against the Reds. Again, that's twice against the Reds. A little bit different too, because the four-seamer wasn't as upstairs as it was before, but it was 5.1 innings of two earned runs, four hits, two walks, and seven Ks for Brandon Sproat. And sweepers were down and generally away from right-handers, not as well as it was last time, but pretty good. And the sinker was much better. The cutter was there for 64% strikes. And the curveball had a sub 60% strike threshold, but that's fine. Because nearly all of them, I think all but one was thrown in a two strike count. Great. You didn't make major mistakes with curveballs in two strike counts. I love seeing that. He gets Arizona and Diamondbacks next in Arizona. I'm all for that. You have Justin Robleski killing it in Sacramento. He had seven innings of 300 runs, seven hits, zero walks, and 11 strikeouts, 19 whiffs. I got to say, I love the Dodgers throwing him for 110 pitches because it's a six-man rotation. They don't really care about protecting Robleski. I love it. RoboCop had a great time in Sacramento, and it's strange because he's not really doing anything different still. It is the 95-mile-per-hour fastball, which is different than like the 93, 94 that we saw at the beginning of the year, right? And it did mean that he got to two strikes more often, and then the put-away rate, which we've seen around like 33% or lower, which is very low. Like, that is incredibly low. Normally, we see like 45 to 55% for an overall put-away rate. This was up to 65, and what I'm trying to say is that he got to two strikes more often and then put guys away efficiently. He's throwing tons of strikes. The four-seamer is just harder to hit, and it is a put-away rate of 56% two starts ago as well, so it does seem like this harder fastball is making him more efficient, is better in two-strike counts now that it's harder and he keeps it upstairs. It's a good sign. He does get Rocky Road next. Cool. We're going to go with that with Justin Robleski. And Griffin Jacks did the thing we've wanted too. And I'll tell you exactly what that is after this break. Griffin Jacks, six innings, 300 runs, five hits, zero walks, and five Ks with just eight whiffs, but 71 pitches, but six innings. Finally, we have not seen Griffin Jacks' six innings. In last game, he went over 85 pitches. So I was thinking, oh man, it's going to be six innings. And it was. Now, 71 pitches, as the Rays didn't really want to push it, I guess. That's fine with me. Totally fine. He allowed two home runs. One was a sweeper that was way upstairs that to Bobby Witt Jr. that he hit for a home run. Fine. And the other one was the first pitch he threw of the day. A sinker just kind of down middle up for a home run. Whatever. Otherwise, just amazing. Griffin Jacks is still working. It seemed very basic at first. And a lot of people were like, I don't know if I want to do this. I'm like, no, you've held on to Griffin Jacks, right? I have. You have Matthew Boyd against the Padres. We also saw Javier Saad go at the end of this, by the way. And he went over 50 pitches, which makes me think he's not really going to go in 2 days for the Cubs. Might be a bullpen game. Might be some Wicks in there. You might see some Bryce Wilson. So don't really touch anyone there for that one. But Matthew Boyd against the Padres, five innings of 300 runs, eight hits, zero walks, and two strikeouts, six whiffs. Pretty much a Wonka save for the win. And it was a home run from Tatis and Machado that really enabled all earned runs. But this was a game of the four-seamer just terribly located over the plate. And not really having the best groove. So he gets Baltimore and going into Cincinnati next. It can be fine. But if you're in a 12-teamer and you have other options, I would prefer that. I would go for Cade Cavalli or go for even Brandon Sproat, I think. I would just take the chance there instead. Jose Soriano at Seattle. Five innings, 300 runs, six hits, one walk, and nine strikeouts. It's good version of Soriano, even though we had a sub 50% sinker rate. Strike rate, rather, 42% is so bad on that sinker. He did have a 70% strike rate on his four-seamer, which is kind of cool. Like, he actually adapted in reverse of what we normally expect. And the CSW darling that is the curveball, oh yeah, that was doing its thing. He did have a careful Icarus, too. It was five shutout frames. And then Jose Soriano on the sixth allowed three singles, got knocked out of the game, and all three of them came around to score. It's very, very annoying. He's going to Arlington next. All we can hope is that he keeps the CSW going with that curveball and the four-seamer. But you never really know what you're going to get with Jose Soriano. Eric Fede against the Orioles didn't do well. More at 11. Mike Burrow's got a win. That's very nice. And there's nothing here to report. Martin Perez did not get you a win. And he didn't do well. Five innings of 400 runs. Eight base runners and one strikeout. How am I supposed to butter my bread with that? But it doesn't mean he's incapable of doing well against the Mets. So take that as you will. If you're going to be chasing a win, he's still an option for that. Bubba Chandler is pitching better. 6.1 innings of 5 earned runs, 7 hits, 2 walks, and 6 Ks. This is a very textbook careful Icarus, where his first 6 innings were 2 earned runs. And within 5 hits and 1 walk and 6 Ks, like, that's a beautiful outing. And it would have been 5 straight games, 5 straight of Bubba Chandler returning 2 earned runs or fewer. And that 7th inning was a double, I believe it was a single bunt and single walk or something along those lines. It was 2 singles and a walk and a bunt, and it was just out of the game, and there you go. A walk, bunt, 2 singles, hook. There you go. So sorry about that. And now he gets the Nationals, Brewers, and Yankees. So Bubba is throwing these high four-seamers and dancing to the disco with sliders. I'm shocked it's just 2 out of 40 whiffs on the four-seamer. He threw a lot of them that were very competitive, and the Phillies got to them, which is a little telling in some way. So I'm a little concerned here that it's not as overwhelming as it should be. I mean, 22% CSW on the day here for Bubba Chandler. It's the Nationals, Brewers, Yankees again. I don't want to start him for it, but it may be something of note. It might be him just like taking small steps forward. Tanner Gordon didn't do well. Sure, fine. JP Sears looked like the JP Sears I kind of expected last time. 4.2 innings of 6 earned runs, 8 hits, 3 walks, 4 Ks. You don't want to go for that. Jeffrey Springs in Sacre Verde against the Dodgers was bad. More at 11. I love that phrase. No sunshine and rainbows there. Rhett Lauder is likely out of the rotation now because Hunter Green should be returning before he would go next. 4.2 innings of 6 earned runs, 11 hits, 1 walk, but 8 Ks. You might be thinking that like this is actually good. He had some good sinkers. He had very, very efficient in those 2 strike counts. Some good sliders, but no, you don't really want to go for that and save for those days. Cam Sluther and Joe Ryan had bad days. It was 3 innings of amazingness for Joe Ryan, and then the 4th was just disaster, ended with a grand slam. Well, Cam Sluther allowed 4 home runs against the Tigers, 2 off of Riley Green. And it's very strange to see 0 whiffs on 36 pitches in that first frame from Cam Sluther. Velocity's fine, movement's fine, locations weren't so bad. Something was off, something was weird, and I don't think that's going to stick around. Noah Cameron, I was hoping his command would be much better than this, and wasn't even the worst, even though 0 strikeouts and 12 base runners in 3.2 innings with 3 walks. It's just not effective enough, and he's down to 91. He's not getting any chases out of the zone. Trey Gibson wasn't very good. He has such a good slider. It's 89 to 90 miles per hour with the -5 drop, which is awesome. And then it went 50% strikes and 1 over 16 whiffs. So, nope. We don't touch him whatsoever. And then you have Landon Roop. Oh, boy. Not a good one. He's, you know, generally well-versed at going 5-6 innings, but 2.2 innings of 6 earned runs, 5 hits, 6 walks, 4 Ks. He just did not have it. And then you have Adrian Hauser, who came in for 5.1 innings of relief, 2 earned runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 1 strikeout. I mean, 2 whiffs, 20% CSW. Just throw strikes, Roop, clearly. He should be able to bounce back. Don't judge him too harshly for it. All right, that is it for today. Thank you all so much for your support. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.